Yeah, this is a big deal. This is a huge part of history, not just for Savannah, but for the country. Can you tell us a little bit about how SCAD became involved?
Yeah, so SCAD, really heard of the story by Dr. Walter O. Evans, who's a benefactor, and started the Walter O. Evans Center for African American Studies that really celebrates African American art and artists. The center was established in 2011 to kind of help promote that work. But Dr. Evans brought the story to President Wallace, and she was so moved that she decided to dedicate a space in the museum to honor the history of William and Ellen Craft. We have a bronze medallion in the center of the lobby that really honors that legacy, right? It's important to note that the connection with the Craft story is that they came through this space here on their journey toward freedom, right? So they were an enslaved couple from Macon, Georgia, who, you know, took a train from Macon to Savannah. And this is, you know, the museum currently sits where the Central Georgia Railway complex currently or historically stood. So that's kind of the connection and how we kind of became aware of the story, and we just kind of moved to kind of keep that history because SCAD is committed to historical preservation in that way. Yeah.
And this is an amazing family legacy. Did you always grow up with this story?
So interesting. I don't remember exactly how old I was when I first heard the story. I do know that it wasn't until 1969 that the book that my great-grandparents, Ellen and William Craft, wrote around 1860 when they were in London, that I was able to read the written word about the story. And I'm not trying to tell my age, but I was 19 at the time, in 1969. So, and I was talking earlier that Ellen and William Craft were 22 and 24 years of age when they devised this plan to escape from slavery in Macon, Georgia, because, well, not only because they wanted to be free, but also they wanted to have children, and they did not want to have children in slavery because they themselves had witnessed being torn away and experienced being torn away from their siblings and from their parents. And actually, at the age of 11, Ellen was torn away from her mother and given as a wedding gift to her half-sister. So, fast forward, they were able to devise this plan for with Ellen posing as a white, southern, young planter, and William as her slave. They were able to do that because Ellen looked white. She was the product of the slave master and the slave master's slave, one of the horrors, if you will, of slavery. So she looked white. And so they were able to buy pieces of garment, so a man's pants, jacket, a top hat. And because they couldn't read or write, another horrors of slavery, they put Ellen's arm in a sling so she wouldn't have to write. They covered her face with a white cloth so that they couldn't see her smooth skin, and also that would support the fact that she was ill. You know, and that's why they were going to Philadelphia for treatment. And green speckled glasses, because they didn't want to see her eyes and the fear in her eyes as they moved from Macon, Georgia, first stop, as Joel said, to Savannah at the railroad station. And so it really was 5 years ago that I came to the SCAD Museum, mm-hmm. because SCAD honored, and that was just wonderful. I mean, for Dr. Evans to know about the history, because the books were published once they, Ellen and William, escaped all the way to London, by the way, in order to avoid the slave catchers who were after them in Boston. The other significance for me is not only that Ellen was 3 years older than I was when I first read the story, but I mean young. Mm-hmm. But the bravery, the determination, and the willing to risk their lives to be free, starting on December 21st, 1848, and 4 days later, ending in Philadelphia free on Christmas Day. So that has more significance to me than it did when I was a little girl. And it's a great story, one that, you know, SCAD has, in my mind, lifted up to Georgians and to the country, actually. You know, all of us, many of us, knew the story of Frederick Douglass and other slaves who became free, who escaped slavery. Not many knew about the story. Not many today know the story about Ellen and William Craft's ingenious plan to escape. And at the time of their escape, actually, they were very well known in Philadelphia, because shortly after they got there, the white and black abolitionists put them on the lecture series, mm-hmm. to talk about the negatives and the horrors of slavery, to convince everyone that slavery needed to end. So they became this great voice for against slavery, and took it all the way to London, mm-hmm. Where they again did the very same thing.
Yeah. And their home in London is also recognized. I saw that it has a historic plaque, yeah. on the outside of it.
Right. Just recently, about 2 or 3 weeks ago, the English Heritage honored them with a blue plaque on their home where they lived in London. And because for their work in campaigning against slavery. And I will say they got to London because they had to escape the United States. Again, they were in Boston, but they had to go all the way to Nova Scotia to take the steamship. And even that road, as I read the story over and over again, was a harrowing experience. Experiencing racism and prejudice, but not wanting to get caught. And mm-hmm. so they were in London for 20 years. They had their five children there. And when my great grandfather, who was my grandmother's father, was the firstborn of Ellen and William Craft. That's when they came back to the United States in the summer of 1869 that they came back in the summer. And in 1870 is when they moved to outside of Savannah, yeah. and rented a home that was shortly thereafter burned down by the Ku Klux Klan. And then 2 years after that, I think, they bought land in Bryan County, mm-hmm. Georgia, to start a cooperative to help the formerly enslaved learn to read and write, and giving them opportunities to farm their own land and make their own money.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, and so that was, they had a wonderful, interesting, challenging mm-hmm. life.
Mm-hmm. Inspiring for sure.
And now there's a film.
And now there's a film. See, you know, I think we are always thinking about how we kind of mark history at SCAD, right? We know that we have buildings throughout Savannah that we've kind of preserved, and we've kept the kind of original architecture as part of, you know, the building, so that we can continue to tell the histories of what existed here before. So if you think about the SCAD Museum of Art, you know, like the exposed brick in the architecture is really a signal to and a nod and a kind of honoring of the enslaved people who helped kind of build, right, this space, right? And so when you think of the film, it's another way of saying, like, we have the medallion and we want to extend the story. We want audiences to know that this story exists, right? Because of what, you know, Vicky just mentioned earlier, that many of these stories of enslaved folks or formerly enslaved folks, right, are not recorded, right, for many reasons, right? We know that the anti-literacy laws existed, but what that also meant, not that they couldn't, they, you know, not only that they that black folks, right, could not read and write, but you also couldn't circulate any literature mm-hmm. that documented or talked about escape, right, or resistance or refusal. And so the film really emerges as a kind of extension of, again, our commitment to the Kraft family story with the medallion, and now it gets to kind of have wider circulation. And so, you know, this evening we have the commemorative event that celebrates, you know, this story, and it's kind of our public premiere, right, of the film to wider audiences. But yeah, the film exists, and we get to hear really beautiful accounts from, you know, Vicki Davis Williams and Gail Da Costa, and really kind of shape, right, what we know of the craft story.
I think that the point you raised about that I also raised about not learning to read and write right. in slavery. So it wasn't until they got to London that they spent 2 or 3 years in Ockham, Surrey County, England, where they learned to read and write
yeah.
and wrote the book, mm-hmm. Running 1,000 Miles to Freedom,
yeah.
Which is the book that was reprinted, it was reprinted several times in London, but in the United States, it wasn't reprinted until 1969. And so I was able to read it.
Which is 100 years.
Exactly.
After they came back.
Exactly. Which is kind of significant, right? And maybe speaks to, I think, some of the reluctance to kind of, you know, thinking about the impact essentially of something like anti-literacy laws, right? And mm-hmm. those kind of statutes set in place. And so, you know, that kind of reticence, right? Or hesitation, or just, you know, outright avoidance of the subject matter, mm-hmm. I think is, you know, was present, I think, you know, up until, you know, which 1969, as you mentioned.
1969.
And so you think about, I think SCAD, mm-hmm. I think recognizes mm-hmm. that kind of reticence, that kind of, you know, yeah, I don't know, like the hesitation, if you will, to kind of tell these stories. And we're kind of boldly standing in place and saying, here's what you need to know of this place that we're here. I think that's the only way to kind of, we all benefit from this history, essentially. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah.
Well, you know, in the history of slavery, our experiences of slavery wasn't something that I learned in school in depth at all.
Yep.
Right.
And so this is another example of people who are not well known mm-hmm. in the U.S. history,
yeah.
and we know it because they wrote their history.
Yeah.
They wrote the book.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are probably many other stories of escape, but because it wasn't written, mm-hmm. we don't know it. Now yeah. it might have been passed down
for sure.
oral mm-hmm. history.
Yeah, well, I was going to say also that, right, that oral histories are also discredited, right? And so if the stories aren't passed down, you know, no one then sought out to record these oral histories mm-hmm. when they had the opportunity to record them. And so they're presented as folklore and myth. And so I think it's really a call. Like, I think when I think about the Kraft family story, mm-hmm. it's a call of many things, right? It's a call of thinking about, like, how to stand for things that you believe in, right? This is a moment to say, we're not going to, you know, they imagined essentially As Sadia Hartman put it in one of her texts, like a life otherwise, right? Like we think about refusal, like you are thinking, you're imagining what else can exist, right? And that's out of a necessity. You know, we think you mentioned passing earlier, and I think that we recognize even the nuances in passing, that there are folks who pass as a way to gain access, right, to a particular kind of space. But what happens when the passing comes out of a sense of necessity, right, and not as one that you, you know, like that it was really out of like an urgency, right, to kind of survive.
You know, for Ellen, it was, you know, as I said, horrors of slavery. Right. Her mother was raped by the master. Absolutely. But they were able to use her white complexion to escape. So they used that to advantage. And I'm so grateful that they were smart enough to use that to their advantage to become free, because I wouldn't be in this form today here. So,
and what gets continued to be troubled by that is, or rather that what that kind of points to is that you could have easily passed, right, as a white person, particularly in this case a white man, and then stayed, right? You could have stayed.